Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jess Bunyard.
And me, Jacob Basford.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are listening to us. We are recording on a Wednesday morning, beautifully sunny. We had a double rainbow at training last night. There was a little bit of hail, there was a little bit of rain, all the seasons. But I'm giddy because I'm coming off the back of a really, really good training session. Jacob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jess. Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, the weather is definitely it looks really warm out there this morning. It isn't though, it's about 6 degrees. So that's a bit frustrating. But yes, I've been having a bit more of the all seasons lately when it comes to the weather. Obviously, we're gonna go through it in the rest of the pod. A really good weekend of rugby in general. I would say the Women's Six Nations, awesome. Champions Cup rugby, awesome. And of course, we had the Alliance Cup, which we'll discuss later on in the pod. I'm all good. This week, I've been busy outside of uni stuff with a lot of York Vision, the student newspaper stuff. I've been laying up my sports section. USU, the student union, have been very kind to us and has upgraded Vision to a spanky new office.
Nice.
Which is great. Unlike the last office, we now have a functioning toilet. So that's the joys of
The
student media.
standards of journalism right there. That's how you know you've moved up in the world. You get a working toilet.
Exactly. And speaking of York Vision, I'm going to give a quick shout out to our wonderful social secretary, Anna Mail. I was chatting with her. She's awesome. I was chatting with her on Monday and I mentioned that I was doing this podcast and she looked at me and went, "Jacob, not another man doing a podcast." And I was like, "Yeah, that's fair, bestie. That's fair."
That should be the new title. We should put that underneath, like LTW Fancast, not another man doing a podcast.
I know. I know. I mean, yeah, she's right. A lot of men do podcasts, a lot of men in rugby, but I don't think that any of the Leicester Tigers related podcasts have that issue. But no, yeah, she'll enjoy that shout out, Anna. But yeah, that's all from me, Jess. Obviously good to hear about the training last night. Obviously you were able to do to the game at the weekend as well.
Found a referee, thankfully, and had a really good game. Or sort of, we did some series of games, which was really well done. Defensively, started really well for the first game, held them out from scoring completely, which is really good, and then got into our groove. Try scoring wise, scoring some really good tries, creating some space, then passing it out wide, which was nice, and then getting most of our conversions as well, which is awesome. So, and all of it while it was nice and sunny, which makes a change because we've had waterlogged pitches and mad issues. But this is not a deep dive about the Huddersfield women's team. This is a deep dive pod about the Leicester Tigers women's team. So let's crack on. I'm going to give you a kind of a rundown of what's happening this week. We're going to do a review of the Quins game. And Jacob has done an interview with the awesome Max Kirby because I was obviously at training last night. Then we're getting into some Six Nations review stuff. We got some stats. We're going to preview the next upcoming Allianz Cup game. We're the only team, well, we're not because we've got an opposition. We're the only fixture this weekend to play. We're going away at Ealing, kicking off at 2 p.m. We're going to go into the final stuff because the final has obviously been confirmed for the cup. So what's that look like? Then we're going to go into a bit of a Six Nations deep dive and finishing off all of that in one breath, breathe, Bunyard, with the previewing of the upcoming Six Nations games this weekend. So let's crack on. So a massive, massive thank you and kind of hip, hip hooraying to Leicester Forest Rugby Club who have decided to sponsor us for this season. And I'm really, really excited because they're such a strong grassroots club and we know they've got strong links to Tigers. And for me, I'm really, really pleased to be linking with a grassroots club that's so passionate about women and girls rugby and working so hard in the Leicestershire region to help grow the game. And just like the Leicester Tigers women's team, I feel it's important for us to build strong connections with the surrounding community. So we know, and I know when I spoke to Vicky for a previous publication, she didn't just want to like pick up and drop a women's team in the middle of Leicestershire without any connection to the outside world. She wanted to help grow women and girls rugby in the surrounding region and then forge stronger pathway links and grow the game and help more people pick up a rugby ball and experience the benefits of it and use the Leicester Tigers women's team, a successful Leicester Tigers women's team, to do that. So for us, it feels like we're helping that model by forging these really, really strong links with Leicester Forest Rugby Club. So we're going to bring you some more info, some insights into the rugby club, the strong links they've got with Tigers. But for now, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Leicester Forest Rugby Club, for sponsoring us. And I'm really, really excited that we're building such strong connections with such a strong community rugby club. So, kicking off our Quinn's review section. Now, Jacob, I know you spoke about this in quite kind of really good detail with Max. So we're not going to rehash a lot of what was said because you've got that fantastic interview to come. But I think it's important to say to me that I like, and I think I said it on social at one point when I was tweeting from the Fancast account, that no matter the score, I think it's really good that we're getting and using the cup in order to kind of bridge the gap between the championship and the PWR and using it as a stepping stone. And I kind of mentally, I keep coming back to what Jess Hayden said about using it as a bridging the gap, but also like looking to what Exeter were able to do in the cup in their first couple of seasons, and then using that as a sort of a beacon of hope for us. And yes, scores don't always go our way, but actually get ensuring players have a bank of playing time, I think is at this stage vastly more important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think unfortunately, yeah, it's great we were able to do this fixture, but it was 6 weeks since our last competitive fixture, and a lot of that first team haven't started a game since October. So, kind of going forward, this is not a club issue, this is probably like a league issue. We have to be sort of considering options as to how we're playing fixtures more regularly, or just getting the girls more game time.
Yeah,
Is that
and I'm kind of contrasting, sorry to cut in, I'm thinking also about like the men have had a very similar issue. Obviously, they had those 7 week gap, and obviously some players couldn't play in the Prem Cup final. So I'm thinking of Montoya, I'm thinking of Visa. They had a 7 to 8 week gap, and then we saw them when we welcomed Gloucester at home in the men's Prem, how rusty they looked and how much time it took for them to get back in the swing of things. And I think we are now seeing them like, now fully back in. But it was almost like that first Gloucester game was like a pre-season fixture for them when we played Gloucester at home. So I think this is sort of a new challenge in both men's and women's rugby and how the calendar has looked this year. And I'm hoping there's a bit of knowledge sharing because it's obviously a similar problem across both squads.
Yes. Yeah. No. Absolutely. But yeah, I think the game was really good. I think it was quite telling of our season. That's what me and Max are gonna delve into in a little bit. Kind of, we started, that our starting XV was a lot of the girls that played for us last season or played for us in the Alliance Cup, and then we had the obviously our England, Scottish, and Welsh internationals were unavailable, but we still had our wonderful North American contingent. And they came off the bench and really changed the game. I believe they are unavailable for this for the game against Ealing this weekend. We're not 100% sure, but we're assuming that that's the case. So yeah, I think it showed that there's still that gap in our squad, I think, in terms of like experience at the top level. And this is what this kind of game was for. It's for bridging that gap. And it's what this weekend's game is for as well against Ealing. It's for bridging that gap in our squad, making sure we're not over reliant on our internationals, and that we're giving exposure to the core of our squad, And like I said, bridging that gap between Championship One North and the PWR.
Exactly. And look, Quins aren't without experience. They weren't without experience when we played them last weekend, because they still had Shauna Brown, the likes of Shauna Brown and Rachel Burford. So, vast amount of experience gained by our players to be playing against the likes of those. And I think it's exactly right that we're using the cup in this manner. It's not just, we're not just looking at the next season or the next two seasons. Playing this way and getting players' experience means we're looking at kind of building a squad for the next 3 to 4 years, which is really, really important. And I think a quick shout out to Roisin McBrien and Churchie Knight, who have joined the 30 club. They're set to become, or they have become, the fifth and sixth players to reach 30 appearances for Leicester Tigers women's team. So, woo woo.
So obviously it was the debut for Jemima Moss, which is what me and Max will talk about as well. Very interesting signing, which Max certainly approves of, which means now I'm getting quite interested in it as well. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the rest of the game. We'll also talk about kind of like Max's views on Tigers this season, where he thinks sort of things are going to be next season, and so much more. So without further ado, we'll just head over to my wonderful chat with Max from Tuesday night, and we'll be back with the quick Six Nations review. So I am delighted to be joined by, how do I describe you, Max? Super fan, our inside person. You seem to be so informative all the time with player transfers, who's doing what. Firstly, I mean, thank you so much, Max, for joining me to chat about the Alliance Cup game from this weekend against Harlequins.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you. I some people would say I probably watch too much rugby, if that is even possible.
No, I'm sure there are plenty more people that watch more rugby than you, but there can never be enough watching of too much rugby, I would argue. I mean, without further ado, let's get into it. I mean, obviously, you were lucky enough to be there at Matley Woods, Welford Road on Saturday to watch the Alliance Cup defeat. Unfortunately, Tigers losing 19-33 to Harlequins women in the aptly named seventh place playoff. So what was it like, and what did Tigers do well at the weekend, despite the unfortunate nature of the result?
Yeah, it was kind of a microcosm of the season, really. It was sort of a mixed bag, and a bit of a tale of two halves, which seems to be the way it's kind of gone most of the time. We were pretty much on top for the first 10 minutes and sort of dominating territory and putting them under a load of pressure in their 22, and they were sort of struggling to exit. But yeah, we weren't. We didn't take any. We came away with no points. So then, as soon as they then managed to turn the game on us, things started going quite badly wrong for the next sort of half an hour or so, and some of the old problems started sort of kicking in. It was quite a relatively inexperienced team at this level that was out there to start with a bit of a stronger bench. So like, it was encouraging to start with, and then yeah, some of the old problems started kicking back in when Quins finally managed to get a bit of territory. They really kind of cut us apart at times. I was just looking at their back line as well. I think it's really, really, really quite strong for this sort of level. Flo Robinson was very, very good for Exeter last year at scrum half. Ella Cromack at fly half, probably one of the best young tens playing at the moment. I think she's still a teenager, but she's getting some really good game time with Quins this season. Really big boot, and that was really key for them, just sort of like to relieve pressure. And we couldn't really match that in any way. And then in the centres, you've got Rachel Burford, who is a bit of a legend in the game.
Yeah, of
And then
course.
Langi Tuima, who was playing for the Red Roses last season. So when they had the ball in our territory, they were able to do much more with it. and they were getting over the gain line. And then as soon as they get over the gain line, our defense sort of narrowed up, and they were able to sort of get round us and score some tries, which has kind of been the way that we've conceded a lot of our tries this season, particularly early on in the season, was when teams could hit through us and then punish us out wide. You know, it's that classic sort of earning the right to go wide, and then us not resetting our defense in time. That's the speed of the game with these, you know, a lot of these players which were playing Championship rugby last season. So then, yeah, just not quite adjusting to the speed of the play that they could bring to us. And there was some poor kick chase or kicking decisions, or not quite having our chase settled, you know, and then they hit us on the counter attack and that sort of thing. And they put us under a lot of pressure in that first half.
Yeah, like you said, it did come across like it was kind of like a microcosm of our season. You know, playing well in patches, and yeah, it definitely. I think considering the nature of the team that was named to start, it's not surprising that potentially it felt a lot like the games at the start of the season where we were really struggling in patches. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you've been following the Tigers women and often given us as the pod, me and Jess, a lot of info. I mean, obviously, you talked about it a little bit there, but like, kind of, could you give maybe the listeners a slight insight as to what your views have been on the Leicester Tigers women team this season?
Yeah, it's about probably about par, really. So before the season, I was quite optimistic, despite sort of the young squad we were. I mean, we were like signing quite a lot of sort of promising, sort of early 20s kind of players. Some of them have been captain of the nations and things like that. And I was like, okay, we're not going to shoot straight up the table, but I think, you know, this is something that we can really develop and work with. And then when the group stage for the Allianz Cup came around, it kind of made me reassess a little bit about where we were at and exactly. I knew it was going to be a big jump up from
Yeah, of
Championship level,
course.
but I was, probably wasn't quite sure how big a jump that was going to be. And then, yeah, I went down to Oval Park to watch the Worcester game.
Yes, yeah.
And like their backs were on another on a different planet to ours that day, and I was like, wow, okay, they these that that's that was a serious team, and it's really sad that we've lost that we lost that club this season, unfortunately. And then the Exeter game before the season started, before the PWR started, when Exeter hammered us. And I was just looking at their pack, and I was just sort of like, they look like they dwarfed our forward pack, and I was sort of like, so I was starting to think, okay, this might be even harder than I thought, and in many ways that sort of played out, but it was also you could see the improvement in the team, and you could see little elements that were getting better each match, even if, you know, we were still sort of shipping tries, and definitely the international players coming in, you know, really, really helped. And probably from about New Year onwards, I think the Saris, sort of the Saris game, sort of that first half performance, and then all the games in the new year, I think we were really sort of, I think you could see a definite shift that like some that things were really starting to click at that point, I think. And then we got the breakthrough Sale win, followed that up with like really, really pretty incredible effort against Gloucester. And then I was lucky enough to sneak down to Franklin's Gardens to see his beat Lightning, which was probably our best performance of the season, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it definitely that Gloucester Hartbury game will always be a what if moment, I think, from the season. Had we got that win over the line, or even if we'd have held on for the draw, I think, obviously notwithstanding that Saints away derby, Loughborough Lightning win was also sensational. But yeah, I mean,
What I really liked is that even when we were getting beat, usually we were having really good patches,
yeah.
or even like full halves where, you know, we were really competitive. And I'd always think back to very early in the season, we went away to Gloucester, and they absolutely annihilated us in the first half. It was a point a minute stuff, and we hadn't even got into their half really. But then we came out in the second half, and we ended up winning the second half, which was you can't ask any more from the team when they're staying motivated, even when they're getting, even when they're getting beat quite badly. They're not letting their heads drop, and they know where they're at, and then they don't allow that to get them down, and they just keep cracking on. Next job, next job. That's what Vicky McQueen always says, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I think you were talking about a little bit just there, but in terms of like, where do you think you've seen the most growth and development from the team this season? So you're talking about, the season's been sort of a season of two halves, whereas kind of that Alliance Cup, the first few rounds of the PWR, sort of, getting to grips with the league, adjusting to that massive jump from Championship One North, and then like after Christmas, we had that first 20-minute performance against Saris. We had our first away victory at Sale. We had that performance versus Gloucester Hartbury. We had that win versus Loughborough Lightning. Where have you seen sort of the most growth and development from Tigers women in that period?
Again, I think you can go back to the game at the weekend. It's just sort of when we brought a little bit more experience on and a bit more physicality on, we were able to sort of adjust to the speed of the game. And that's really the most important thing, I think, because, early on in the season, when I said, I think we were conceding a lot of our tries because we weren't resetting our, we weren't able to reset our defence quickly enough. So either that's players getting round the corner at the ruck, or making sure you've got, your chase ready to sort of put the pressure on when we are kicking the ball away. Having those things is really, really important. Like resetting your defense and making sure you're not being taken apart with the kick battle. And then I think we were always relatively good at the set piece. I think even though we were, not too experienced, I think line out, scrum, maul, I think we generally, made a decent fist of it, even if we haven't always come out on top in those areas. And then in attack, we've been finding ways to be more effective without just relying on Meg Jones to do some wizardry, or Fran McGee just to get the ball on the wing and just burn somebody, in no room whatsoever. That showed in the second half, in the Quins game, bringing on Sangapolu and Brody, those guys instantly up the physicality in any game they're on. They're just smashing tackles over the game line, and that really is half the battle with these elite teams. It's just like you've got to compete physically, because otherwise they're just going to walk through you. And Claire Gallagher, another classic chip and chase. I think that extra kicking option in the midfield, helped. I did wonder if the wind was probably a little bit stronger than it kind of felt in the stands, and whether Quinns had more of that wind in the first half, and then that flipped in the second half, and then we had a little bit more. We were able to impose more territory pressure on them.
Probably. I mean, the wind was definitely a factor in that game on Saturday. I mean, it was windy all over the country. But yeah, like as you said, like I think especially having the impact of the North Americans off our bench was able to like level the playing field. And yeah, like Brody and Sangapolu have been awesome for us all season.
Fury had an absolute stormer of a half, second half. Fantastic. But every time she got the ball, she was doing damage. Really impressed. And she was kicking the goals as well. So that's a useful option to have for a fullback.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, we're big fans of Tess. I did an interview with her earlier on in the season. She's great. And she brings a lot of leadership to the team as well. She's vice captain of the US Eagles. So yeah, huge fan of Tess. Yeah, I mean, obviously you talk about the growth there. I mean, I think kind of one of the things I want to move on is, where do you think Tigers' goal should be for next season on the pitch? Like, we've talked a little bit because we've been previewing the Alliance Cup. We've been talking about how Exeter have used the Alliance Cup to really establish themselves at this level. Do you think there's maybe an opportunity for Tigers to do that next season? What do you think about that?
I think it's going to be a gradual thing, and it might be another couple of years, I think, before we're really sort of ready to compete. If we can't, go out and just make a load of, bring in a load of red roses, it's not really realistic to try and prize some of them away from the clubs where they're at the moment. But we've got to be harder to score against, really. That's what it comes down to. Especially at home. We've got to find ways of dealing with opposition's physicality, and we've got to be harder to score against. And that's not it's an easy thing to say. It's not an easy thing to actually achieve. We've got to turn those sort of 20, 30, maybe 40 minute periods where we're, really in the game, and we've got to make that the whole game. We've got to make sure, we've got a handle on this English qualified players quota sort of situation, whether that's through signings or, it's like I say, it's not easy because there's only so many sort of players that are English qualified that are experienced at this level in order to raise the quality of the whole group. But we've got to find English players somewhere that aren't just, that's going to take more time to get them up to speed, I think it's not necessarily about the wins. It's more, you just got to keep growing those performances game on game, haven't you? And season on season.
Yeah, 100%. I think you raised quite a fundamental issue with the English player qualified quota system. It is kind of, how do we grow the sort of our team unless we sign loads of like red rose quality internationals, and how do we afford that? How do we prize them away from the clubs? It's an issue. And I think, yeah, I definitely think you're right. It's kind of making us a bit more tougher to beat at home, building ourselves in areas. I like what you said about defence. I think our breakdown has to be better as well, especially at home. But yeah, I mean, going back to sort of the current squad, who's kind of like your player to watch? Like, who's your favourite Tiger? Is it someone that we've not really talked about on the pod, or is it someone... Because, obviously, me and Jess have spoken absolutely loads about Fran McGee, Ellis Martin, Meg Jones. Like, there's so many players that have just, like, really caught the eye this season. But is there anyone that you would want to add to that list, potentially?
Yeah, your favourites, you can't look past Meg Jones, can you? I knew she was, like, a mercurially talented attacking player before we'd signed her, and I was really... That was the signing I was probably most excited about, because you need that stardust in attack, and she has that in spades. But what I didn't appreciate about her was it's so clear that she has such an incredible work ethic, and how much work she does in defense in that 13 channel for us has been absolutely, you can't quantify how valuable it's been. And she's obviously great value around off the pitch as well. She's such a big personality. So yeah, definitely you can't look past her for favourites. But I really like Charlotte Frey as well.
Yes, agreed. Agreed.
As soon as I saw her in the playing in a championship last season, I thought she's different to like almost everybody else on the pitch. She's got natural size and ability. She's really good attack, defence, in the ruck, offload, scoring tries, kicking goals sometimes.
Yeah.
I called her the Sophie Degoody of the championship, because she just seemed like she could do everything. And she's always leading the energy as well. She's always trying to G everyone up and sort of keep the energy up, whether she's on the bench or between plays. She's always sort of the cheerleader for the group, I think.
Yeah, couldn't agree with that more. Really, I'm a big fan of Charlotte Frey. I'm really looking forward to how she gets on next season. Hopefully, getting a bit more game time, a few more starts. But yeah, I remember watching her against Quinns at home in the PWR and being really impressed with the impact off the bench. Like her leg drive and just every carry was incredible. Like Quinns could just not handle it, even if there was two like tacklers on her.
Talked about physicality, like she. she has that, and that's definitely what you need at this level.
But going back to the Quinns game from the weekend in the Alliance Cup, I mean, the attendance was not brilliant. I saw a figure of 200. I don't know the official.
It was like a few hundred at most. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunately it's been like that all season. It's something that me and Jess have spoken loads about. I mean, you spoke on Twitter about your views of the club's social media. I mean, yeah. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, firstly, I think the club were probably in a slightly difficult position of having to promote a seventh place playoff on the day when it was the Women's Six Nations and it was the Champions Cup rugby in the men's game as well. So, yeah, like what if Tigers went to you, you're in charge of Tigers social media. What would have you done for trying to get a bigger crowd at Matty Lee Woods Welford Road for a game like Saturdays against Harlequins?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think attendances have been disappointing this season just because I think they were actually better last season when we were playing sort of a lower standard. And I don't know whether that, you know, I think they had more, they were inviting more clubs to come in, like kids and things like that. Sort of, I don't know whether they were doing lots of freebies for that or group packages and on that sort of thing. And maybe it's just easier to sell a team that's, you know, scoring loads of tries and winning at a canter, you know, all the time. Maybe it's easy to sell a team that's winning, isn't it? But like,
yeah,
it's hard to convince people to come down to watch a team that's probably going to get beaten by 40 points. You know, that's one issue. But it's definitely, I think the club's having to prioritize where it's spending its budget, and it's obviously far more aware of that now than it was, you know, a few years ago, with everything that's happened. And so I do wonder where they're choosing to put their budget. And I think, yeah, social media and that sort of thing, marketing is probably one of the things that's sort of gone a bit neglected, I'd say. With the exception of the sort of the Tiger Eyes sort of series that they put, like the behind the scenes stuff they do for the men on YouTube, which only really tends to get a few thousand views anyway. And I wonder if they probably put too much emphasis on that and not on spending it on other areas where they're to give the socials and the marketing a bit more personality and sort of really marketing the players. I think it was either you or Jess on the account was saying, you know, wouldn't it be great if we did all of these sort of flashy graphics and like really showing off all the players, like the Tigers women players, like the Quinns social media account was. And then I replied that we don't even do it for the men's team. So there's no chance that they're going to do it for the women's team. And I guess it just feels a little bit cold, maybe a little bit sort of that old school Tigers, you know, sort of, we don't do the flashy stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the things that still needs to change, but this isn't, I want to caveat this by saying I don't blame any social media manager, like, or whoever's running these accounts or anything like that, who are obviously working with limited resources, and they might just be one person sitting in an office somewhere, or and they only have so much they can do. It's just whether the club has made the calculation that it's not worth investing in these areas, but it seems like other clubs do feel like it's worth investing. So I'm not sure where the line is there.
Yeah, you raised some important issues there, and you know, yeah, it was me who made that post about the flashy cards thing, and I definitely think it's you know, the attitude that we're Leicester, we don't do anything too flashy, still does linger in the club, I think, unfortunately. But you know, I agree. I think that's something that has disappointed me a lot, is that they haven't marketed the girls players as much as I thought they would, because that's what they're going to have to do to get bums in seats in Matty Lee Woods Welford Road, because they would have known, because of the adjustment between the two leagues, that they wouldn't have been, you know, they wouldn't have been producing performances like they were in Championship One North. So, but yeah, I mean, it is an issue, and it is an issue of budgeting, which me and Jess are aware of every time we do talk about this kind of thing. But you know, there are still improvements in that area that we think can be made within budget as well. But kind of back to the Alliance Cup, obviously, Tigers are away against Ealing next weekend. Ealing have been sort of our team where we've really struggled against this season. In both our games, we weren't at the races at all. So, you know, I mean, I with it being the Alliance Cup, it's quite hard to judge in terms of like result. But, you know, what do Tigers need to do to get a result against Ealing this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, I think. I'm pretty sure the North Americans have all jumped on a flight either today or yesterday to go and prepare for their international matches coming up over the next few weeks. So again, that sort of weakens the overall experience level of the squad that we've got. I think Ealing, I'm not sure what side they'll be able to put out. I think they've been very, really smart with their recruitment. And I think they probably won't be as affected in terms of experience drop-off as we would be, because sort of the second half of our playing squad is definitely inexperienced at this level compared to their squad, I think. So it's going to be a really difficult one. It's going to take just a really big defensive effort. Like I talked about, getting your kick chase right, getting around the corner at the ruck to make sure we can reload our defence. And if we get chances early, you've got to take them, because it showed in the Quins game, we had the early part of the game was ours sort of for the first 10 minutes, but we came away with nothing. And then before half time, we were 26 points down. So you've got to take those early chances, and yeah, you got to stay in the fight. But I think it's probably one of those where the performance and the targets that the coaches will set the players, I think, is probably more important than the win.
In this competition,
particularly if we've got, you know, an even less experienced squad out at the weekend than we did at the Quins game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, it's right. It's make sure our defense is a bit tighter, being a lot more clinical. But yeah, getting that Ealing monkey off our back would be quite good. But as you say, I think it's going to be more performance and individual performances more than result. Yeah, I think obviously last week was the debut of our new signing from Worcester Warriors women, Jemima Moss. You spoke a little bit about her on Twitter, but kind of what caught your eye about her?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good debut. She probably only played about, I think she only played for the first half, but definitely physical. She carried a lot over the gain line. She sort of, her and Frey were doing a lot of the damage through the middle before we brought on Sangapolu and Brody and Amakwali. So yeah, definitely the kind of player I think we should be looking at. If we can't go out and get a bunch of red roses, you know, if we can't go and sign Zoe Olcroft and Sarah Byrne or whoever, you know, to sort of give us that X factor in the pack. She's young, she's English, physically ready for this level and has had some experience with Worcester already. And yeah, I think she's 22 or 23 or something like that. So still loads of room to grow, but already looks like she belongs at that level. And if we can't go and bring in loads of stars, then that's the kind of talent that you've got to try and coax instead and work on it yourself and turn them into red roses.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And finally, obviously, you've been on Twitter giving us top Tiger times throughout the season, but I can't let you go without giving the listeners your top Tiger time from the game on Saturday.
It's going to Churchy Knight.
Nice.
Second
nice.
Try. She's a player I really quite admire, because there's kind of a cliche in rugby that the props kind of secretly fly halves trapped in a prop's body. And I kind of, it almost doesn't apply to Churchy, because I think she's relatively small for a prop. I think she's deceptively strong. And when she comes up against some of these packs and she looks like she's going to get absolutely demolished, but she really holds her own, I think, despite her size. But she put this absolutely gorgeous left-right pass out to Tess Fury to give her enough space to score the second try on Saturday. And yeah, I was just thought, was that the Lucid prop throwing that lovely 20 meter pass sort of out to the wing. Like that was gorgeous. I think she has a tendency, I've noticed, to sort of go for the Hollywood offload. So I really think she's settled at loose head prop, but yeah, I feel like she kind of still believes that she should be out in the backs throwing out the Hollywood but
Yeah, that's a great choice. I mean, I remember from the Bristol game, she tried like a chicken wing offload and it set, I think it's like Natasha Jones down the wing and the ref called it forward. And yeah, that was a bit, it was a bit 50-50 as whether that was forward or not. But no, yeah, I
yeah.
love that. I love that.
I've seen her go for a similar a few times, and she did another one on against Quinns. None of them have come off yet, but I really admire the ambition, and it's going to work. So it's going to work at some point. It's got to work at some point.
One day it will work out. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me to chat about the game on Saturday, Max. As you said, incredible insight, as you've been giving the listeners on our Twitter throughout the entire season. So thank you so much for joining me. Obviously you're more than welcome on at any point. And yeah, we'll catch you hopefully at some point when both myself and Jess are next at Matterley Woods, Welford Road, for a home game for the Tigers women. But yeah, awesome stuff. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I definitely want to meet in person at some point. Hopefully you can get down for the sale game.
It's time for the Six Nations review. I've got written on my notes how good Meg Jones' footballing skills. Because how good? If you've not been on social media and you've not seen a clip of this, quite frankly, like, where have you been? I think we retweeted it. Tigers have posted it and said that England women's football team are going to come calling soon. And the Red Roses then quote tweeted that, or quote X'd that, whatever the heck we're calling it. Yeah, it's amazing. It is pure footballing skills. So she like just like kick passes it through and in perfect space. And I think you can almost tell they've been having a game of football in training. It looks like they've played games of football in training to work on these skills. Like it's brilliant. And it's not just like this is probably going to turn into like Meg Jones fan cast, but she's topping the stats in other
Wait,
areas.
we're not already?
Yeah, no, true. She's topping the stats in other places already because Opta Johnny have put out some stats today, yesterday, and she's in the top list of players with the highest tackle evasion rates so far in this year's Six Nations. So she's second in the list with 55% of her she's good tackle evasion rate, which is we know how elusive she is. We know how great she is at carrying the ball and creating space. And there's not much more I have to say on that, really. If you haven't seen that kind of footballing skill, it's the self-awareness. It's also the awareness of where your teammates are and positioning. So like Ellie Kildon has to make sure she's in the right spot to receive that as well. She has to make sure she's behind Meg. And you can clearly see, I think, in the clip that Ellie is calling to Meg, saying where they are and positioning. It's great work for those players. And I think it shows for me how England are trying to broaden their attacking skills. Obviously, we had Hannah Bottoman do a kick as well. Now, obviously, that didn't quite go to plan in the game because it went straight into touch, I think, or sort of went skewed sideways into touch. But the fact that players are having the confidence to try these things is, goes along with the suggestion that England are trying to broaden their attack. We know they're amazing at creating tries from driving mauls, for example, but we want to see a bit more of a creative play in there as well, a bit more of a balance into how we're doing things so we can play against different oppositions, broaden our style, get it even more exciting to watch. The things that's worrying me, there's a lot of talk about how England are having it easy. There's some talk around the progressions around the professionalization of the game. some comments on Twitter that Graham Smith was getting involved in, who won the World Cup as England's women's forwards coach, around almost, is there like a sitting back when you're awarded professionalism? You lose your sort of amateur status in your head. So do you lose the going above and beyond? I don't know, but I think
I don't agree with that.
Oh, go. What are your thoughts?
I don't agree with that. I think, yes, I can see what you mean. You kind of, when you've got a professional contract, you lose the sense of, like, because obviously, you know, all those girls in the home nations, in England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and in France and in Italy as well, they have all fought to have professional contracts.
Yes.
So I definitely agree with it from that end, in terms of, like, now you've got the professional contract, you no longer have the impetus to, you know, prove yourself that you are worthy of a professional contract, or that, you know, that the squad are worthy of professional contracts. That doesn't mean that, you know, there's that desire has been lost. They just need to find something else to give them that kind of impetus.
So,
and I think that comes from...
I just want to correct myself. I picked up on it, I think, as Graham Smith replied, but it was actually tweeted by Nick Heath, that Cat Merchant
who said it, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's the question. I think it's a case of, not that standards are dropping because of professionalism, which I'm not sure that's what Cat's saying, but I think it's an interesting point to raise. I think it's almost just a... How are we coping with professionalism? What are the new standards that we're wanting to set ourselves with this? And I think it's just going to take time for it all to settle in. And I don't think, if you look at the score sheet, you think, yes, England are having a really easy ride here and they're having some easy games. But they're not also, on the flip side, making it easy for themselves in other areas. So going back to Hugh Griffin Rugby, who's on Twitter at Rugby Stat Cat, I'm pulling up some stats from him, and England are topping the penalties conceded. And I know that was the talk of the weekend, because we've had a lot of cards. Scrum Queens tweeted and saying that England attack coach Lou Meadows, who is amazing, hi Lou, if you're listening, which she probably isn't, says that the team aren't worried about their discipline because they're taking risks to play braver rugby, and they're going to make some mistakes and will improve on it. I completely agree from that on attacking perspective. You've got to take risks. You've got to be comfortable with taking risks. You don't just go from playing maybe a conservative model of playing rugby, driving mauls, to then doing some more fluid attack from one day to the next. It doesn't happen. And I think we're also seeing that shift in Tigers men at the moment. We're trying to play a bit more of a fluid attack style, and we're making mistakes that come with that. However, where our cards are happening is in defence.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I completely agree with Lou. On the other hand, I'm thinking, I'm seeing a pattern emerge here with England in defence from cards in this Six Nations tournament. Excuse me, there's a frog in my throat because I've downed my coffee. And I'm then thinking back to the World Cup final, and when we didn't make things easy on ourselves and we got carded. Now, okay, on the one hand, you've got to learn to play the best and almost plan for red cards and yellow cards and plan for eventualities and what's going to happen. And I think we've proved that we've been practicing that, because Maud Muir threw in at the line out when Amy Kane wasn't on the pitch, and she did it really well. On the other hand, it's a really worrying stat about penalties conceded, because we're not always going to get an easy ride. And I don't want us to get comfortable with winning and having ill discipline, because France might make it count. And certainly come September, when we host the Black Ferns in that standalone fixture, they're probably going to make it count as well. So I completely agree. When you're wanting to play a more fluid attack, you've got to take risks. On the other hand, defensively, I think we need to just have a continuous work on around being really, really on it, really on it, discipline wise. But I think that will come. New coaching staff, new players getting brought in, changing over. If this is the only kind of mistake or work on for this team, then that's great.
Yeah, I agree. I think the comments about too much of a gap between England and the rest of the Six Nations, I think, is hyperbole at points. And we'll go into that a little bit with the Lions as well. But I do, what does worry me is that because there is that, no, I'm not saying there isn't a gap, there is a gap. And this is, and again, this is just adding to your point, Jess. What worries me is that, you know, the only teams that will really punish England for that poor indiscipline is at the moment is going to be the likes of France and New Zealand. And until
and Canada,
we are in those
when we face Canada, I think Canada could make us pay.
Canada, no, I agree. Actually,
they're not on the horizon yet as a fixture. France and Blackburn's
No, actually, I agree. Canada will. Canada are a team as well that could push us in those circumstances. But, you know, we're not facing the consequences yet of indiscipline. And I think when that does happen, that could be quite a shock. And the media is playing a role in that by emphasizing that there's such a big gap between England and the rest of the Six Nations that might lead to a false sense of security. But yeah, I mean, just going back to from a Scottish perspective, because obviously we had a few Scottish gals playing for Tigers. We had Leah Bartlett again start in the front row. And then we had the rest of our Tigers off the bench. So we had Ellis Martin back on the bench because Lana Skeldon was fit. Again, the line out is really hurting Scotland, which is frustrating. And I think it's obviously that the wind was awful on Saturday. Like the conditions were awful, but their drills do need to be better. And I think it's indicative of the fact, and this is what I was going to talk about earlier, in terms of professionalisation, great. It's great that you're paying the players, but are the people around the players at a high enough standard? And I think that's the main difference. I think, and obviously we'll go into this with the Lions money as well. But you know, the likes of the Scottish, the Welsh, the Irish setup, you know, is that as high level and professional as the Red Roses setup? And I think that's the difference because Scotland, because they all have the players. And I think the Lions tour will prove that, that they are the players to play at the highest level. But, you know, things like, you know, Scotland's line-out drills, it was easy pickings for England, easy pickings. And I know it was the weather as well, but it's been an issue for Scotland all tournament. Sorry, Jess,
I've got a couple of points. And sorry, they're all coming to me. Clearly the caffeine has hit my brain and my brain is now at, you know, 50% working capacity. Yes, I do want to talk about the Lions. I think the point about the coaching is really one. And I just thought, I thought when I was watching the Scotland game, I thought if you're having problems with your line out throws and it's not quite accurate or it's windy or the hooker and the jumper are just having a bad day at communicating to each other and it's just a missed time and you lost your rhythm, whatever the reasons, why do you persist on throwing the same move every time and going to the one jumper or going slightly longer? Why not just an easy short ball or something? Just get the game restarted and just go. And I thought they were almost just a bit too predictable with their lineouts, as well as it not going quite to hand because of the weather or the mistiming or whatever was happening. The weather was really nasty by all accounts. And I just kept I kept seeing the same lineout throws repeated, and I thought, just chuck in a short ball, just do something that makes life really, really easy on all of your forward pack. Just get the game restarted and get yourself a bit of ball in hand and not throw a line out that for whatever reason isn't working for you today and that costs, you know, that costs a spilled possession, because you give England easy possession and we've seen it from Abby Dow, Ellie Kildon, you know, Meg Jones. They are most likely to score. So don't give away that easy possession and just get the ball restarted and keep the ball in hand for yourself. So I was a little bit frustrated on behalf of Scotland for that. But I do think it's a really interesting point about the coach pathway. And I could probably sit here for ages and chat about coach pathways. I don't make it a secret that I want to progress as a coach. Where, you know, what are the pathways for me to follow? Where are the areas for progression? You know, I'm going in to observe a lot of environments in the next couple of months and weeks, hopefully, and that's going to help me. I've been in to observe the Red Roses when Mids was in charge. So I've been to Penny Hill Park and he advised me, like, getting some of those observations down on your CV so that you've been in high performance areas. That's a great way. But it is a frustration of mine that it doesn't quite seem, we don't, you know, in men's and women's rugby in this country, we don't quite seem to have a really good, I think, coach pathway. But some of this money that's been given out from the Lions is going to help that. So it's a £3 million grant for the unions from Lions and Royal London. And it's like a levelling the playing field grant. It's a pathways funding grant. And I think I'm right in saying that I think everybody's picked how they're going to allocate the funding. So the Irish Rugby Union are going to host some additional pathway camps for the under 18s, the under 20s to accelerate player development. They've also got a coach accelerator scholarship program, which sounds ace. So the program I'm quoting here from the Lions. The WRU website. The programme will help accelerate coach capability and long-term career progression with a specific emphasis on removing gender-related career barriers. Hip, hip, hooray. The RFU for England are going to use the grant to further develop player development groups. Scottish Rugby are going to do some performance pipeline coach work, recruiting some additional coaches, delivering additional under-18s and under-20s camps and training matches. WRU are going to look at strengthening their female pathway coaching staff with some new hires and going to invest in some talent ID. It's great. I love all of this. I think there's some discussions around, well, why are England getting the grant as well? And I think I've seen that not everybody is getting like an equal amount of money. I think it's been divvied to who needs, but I'm not sure on that. But I do think it's great that we're not just getting the player investment within this, we're getting the investment from the coach side as well, because you can have the most fantastic players, but if you don't have the infrastructure around to support them, not just coaches, but S&C, nutritionists, medical staff, if you don't have the infrastructure to support the players to support the game, then we're not going to get very far. So,
and that's the problem with the Celtic Nations. They have the players. They 100% have the players. In a Lions professional structure, having the likes of, just names off the top of my head, having Tupilotti from Wales, having Fran McGee from Scotland, you know, Maloney, Monaghan, Niamh Jones, all those fantastic players for Ireland, in a fully professional setup in a Lions camp, they will be brought to a level that is at the same as what England are at the moment. You know, it's not going to be England 2.0 with one Welsh player on the bench. The narrative around that is just, it just really irritates me. Because it's not a recognition of the talent that the Celtic nations have got, and that there is so much talent, and you know, they are bringing that through, and they're bringing that through their own pathways, which they're developing, but they're also bringing it through because of the likes of the PWR. And, you know, obviously we can talk about, could PWR expansion into Wales and Scotland be a realistic option for the future? I think that could be. I think this is a really good initiative. I like that it's tailored, that it's sort of project specific. And I think that is the gap. The gap isn't necessarily play. The gap is depth. I'll 100% agree with that. There is a depth gap, but in terms of like quality players, there isn't a void in which some people would like to suggest so.
My only criticism of this, and it's probably purely selfish, is that the RFU aren't chucking any of the money towards any coach development programs.
Yeah,
that's from a purely selfish perspective, and that I'm looking at what Ireland are doing for a coach accelerator program, and I get quite jealous sat here as a coach based in England. But I don't think they were all getting equal pots of money. I think there's a recognition of where that money needs to be distributed across the home nations. So England have obviously targeted a specific area of need that they're going to use their amount of money on. I'll eventually get my words out and say that sentence properly.
Yeah.
So it's a bit frustrating from that perspective, but it is right that this money doesn't just go to those players already performing at the top of the game. It goes to coaches, and it goes to the supporting of the pathway underneath them, so that we don't just have a fantastic Six Nations competition for the next 3 years and then an amazing Lions tour. We've got fantastic Lions tours for the next decade because we've developed a pathway coming through with this money. And I also think, side note on the Lions, we can probably start maybe thinking about coaches. I think Lou Meadows goes on the Lions tour as a coach because I think she's amazing.
Yeah, 100%. I think just quickly going back to the Scotland game, obviously Fran McGee being back, awesome stuff. I think she got a solid 50 minutes. Fortunately, wasn't really the game for her to have an impact on, but it's awesome that she's back. So hopefully this weekend she'll be starting. And if she is, she's going straight into my fantasy team. Yes. We had Eva Donaldson's first appearance of the tournament. She got about 30 minutes off the bench, which is really, really good. And yeah, just quickly back to Meg Jones. That kick pass, it's not showing off. It's really good skill.
Yes.
And you can tell it's been planned.
Yes.
And it's not only is it really good execution, it's really good knowledge of what's the best option in the conditions, which I think was so... That's what really pleased me. And, you know, that's awesome skill. We love Meg Jones. We're a Leicester Tigers women's fan cast. But Ellie Kildon makes that.
Yeah.
It's the composure. It's the running line.
It's her calling. It's her calling. You can see her calling to Meg saying, I'm here or I'm there or whatever it is. You can see her calling. And I do think, yeah, recognition of playing to the conditions. I think it's also recognition of what... having a multi-sports approach to your rugby training can bring. So I'm going to go back to my team. We're doing some tactical warfare stuff at the moment in our training session. But when we've done this next bank of focus on tactical warfare, we'll do a program block that we do every year that's called like Space Invaders. And we just each week we play a different sport that is an invasion game, but we recognize the skills it can bring to rugby. So I'm going to be showing that Meg Jones score as an example of what your footballing skills can bring to rugby as well as other stuff it can help you. You know, I won't go into having a number eight controlling a ball at the back of the scrum and footballing and dribbling, but I think it's a great emphasis on the wider range of skills that rugby has and when we should bring that stuff into training. But I'm getting bogged down and excited by coaching stuff. But it's an amazing skill, but I don't think that happens without having a sense of fun and maybe playing some football games at training to develop that type of stuff. I don't think it happens without that.
And it's also just a way of expanding the game, as you say, like, you know, it might be a skill set we see more in rugby when there's a difficult pass to do by hand. If you can execute it by a quick kick across, I'm not just thinking Meg Jones, I'm thinking Thomas Ramos did it for Toulouse last season to Entomac in the Champions Cup. It's just if you get the skill right, it might be a safer option than doing a pass from hand. So, you know, who knows? We might see that skill practiced a bit more in both the women's and the men's game.
And I'd also like to thank Ellie Kildon and Meg Jones because they got me quite a lot of points in the fantasy league.
They did.
Ellie got me 51 and Meg got me 26 points. So thanks both. Great work. Same again next week. This week, please. I also had a calendar from Wales. She got me an amazing 34 points. Tuipulotu got me 20. Same again, please. I also picked Jazz Joyce and she got me 24 points on the wing. Thank you, everyone. I'm still not picking the great. I'm not, where am I in the league? I could think I'm like 21st or something terrible.
21st.
Yeah. I feel I'm not picking. I might have to change my scrum half. I don't know. I did have Marley Packer as my super sub this week. I know for a lot of people online, they went for Maloney from Ireland.
I went for Maloney.
Yeah, I really ummed and ahed. But instead, I'm gonna need a rethink this week. I think for sure. But Jacob, where I know I'm 21st. What's the top of the table looking like? I've got no hope of reaching that.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the Johannic Saints have gone down 3 points to 25. I'll go through my team in a second. But yeah, we have had some changes at the top. So we now have a new leader at the top with Kat with 1,339 points. In second place, we've had a massive 5-position climb. Ooh. By Fance, who are now on 1,329 points. And Heather Wintington, last week's leader, has gone down 2 places to third. So that's sort of the name of the game at the top of the table, all getting very exciting. Yeah, what went wrong with my team? Well, Meg Jones was my captain again, which I think was another solid choice. I think what went wrong for me was that I picked Amy Kakane. Unfortunately, the red card obviously sort of reduced points there. Other than that, my team was okay. I dropped Jazz Joyce because she did quite poorly for me last week and put Kaz Rolly in. And I think that was an error. I should have kept Jazz Joyce in. But yeah, Ellie Kildun got me another great points tally as well. And yeah, I did have Lena Maloney as my super sub, and she got me 18 points. So not awful, but I could be better in places. So we'll see how that goes this weekend. But yes, talking of our fantasy league, obviously still a chance to win our wonderful prize courtesy of Charmwood Vintners. And yeah, do not forget to select a new team for this weekend. Obviously, we could see Fran McGee back. We'll see some changes potentially. And so without further ado, we'll just have a quick word from our sponsors, Charmwood Vintners, and then we'll get on with the rest of the pod.
We are absolutely thrilled to announce Charmwood Vintners as the proud sponsor of our Six Nations Fantasy League. They'll be offering a magnum of wine, that's 2 bottles in 1, for the winner. Charmwood Vintners, Leicestershire's local wine merchant, brings an exquisite selection of wines from around the globe. Explore their exceptional range and discover the perfect bottle for any occasion by visiting charmwoodvintners.com.
On to our preview, and we are the only fixture in the Allianz Cup taking place this weekend, but I'm just going to run through the fixtures results from last weekend because it decided the final and the makeup of the final of this cup. So obviously we know our result on the Saturday. There were other games on the Saturday as well. Sale Sharks played Loughborough Lightning. Loughborough Lightning won, scoring 22 points, and Sale Sharks scored 12. Saris played Exeter. Saris won, scoring 36 points to Exeter's 29. And then on the Sunday, Bristol Bears welcomed Gloucester Hartbury. Bristol Bears scored a whopping 54 points to Gloucester Hartbury's 28. That means that the final of the Allianz Cup will be played, and it will make up kicking off Sunday, the 28th of April, kicking off at 2 p.m. It'll be Bristol Bears versus Saris Women. There are other fixtures to kind of decide, fifth place playoffs, third place playoffs. Obviously, we're playing this weekend. We're going to Ealing to play Trailfinders Women on Sunday. Oh, let me get my words out. On Sunday, the 21st of April, we're kicking off at 2 p.m. That's a seventh place playoff pool. That's very difficult to say. Then Saturday, the 27th of April, Loughborough Lightning play Sale Sharks, kicking off at 2:30 in a fifth place playoff. That's the second leg of that. And then on Sunday, the 28th of April, Exeter play Gloucester Hartbury Women in a third place playoff, kicking off at 12:30. And then Finally getting through all these fixtures. The other game to play is Sunday the 28th of April. Quins play Trailfinders, kicking off at 2 in a 7th place playoff pool, but all eyes will be on the final, which is Bristol Bears playing Saris, kicking off at 2 p.m. on Sunday the 28th of April. Ooh, that was a lot of fixtures and results to read out. But let's turn our attention to our game this weekend, kicking off at 2 p.m. on the Sunday. We are away at Ealing. We know it's going to be tough competition, but Ealing are without Abby Dow, obviously, because Abby Dow's in my fantasy league for the Women's Six Nations. But the narrative for us, and I want to be really clear about how we're kind of measuring what is success when it comes to this season, and particularly this bank of cup games for us is. It's just, for me, I think it's bridging the gap. It's just game time. And I don't think we'll be able to truly measure the success of this first season or this bank of cup games and next season's bank of cup games until we're about 3 to 4 years in, when we're seeing Church Unite maybe get, you know, the likes of Church Unite getting like starting positions in the PWR or on the bench and pushing for a real, real impact place. I don't think we'll be able to truly measure the success until then. So it's quite difficult for us. It's possibly quite difficult for other fans, but I think that's the narrative I maybe want to set and talk about is that, like, what is success for us right now? It's getting game time, experience, and banking all of that so that players have got it for future seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you say, Abby Dow will be with England. Potentially Kate Zachary, one of Ealing's star players, will be away with the US, because she's the US captain, I believe. And obviously that means we'll be without our North Americans as well. We will be without Claire Gallagher, Julia Mokwale for Canada, and Sangapulu Sinele, Tess Fury, and Talia Brody for the USA as well. Which means, yeah, I think both squads will be tested in terms of depth. I think we will be, you know, obviously Max talked about this earlier in the pod. I think will be more affected by that than Ealing. But yeah, this is going to be a great opportunity. I think what I quite like about this weekend is that, yes, at points this season, we've seen the likes of Church Unite get game time. We've seen a couple of starts here and there. We've seen Charlotte Frey get a start here and there. This is an opportunity for that first XV to have two starts in a row and start to see the building of those sort of combinations, a bit more game time. I'm looking forward to seeing another sort of Charlotte Frey, Jemima Moss second row partnership. That sounds quite powerful. I'm quite like the idea of that getting a bit more game time as a unit. So you know, I'm by and large, I think that first XV might sort of not really change that much, depending on sort of front rows, maybe. It'll be interesting to see kind of what bench we name as to who's available, who isn't. Could we, for example, get Lisa Cockburn back from Scotland, you know, just to help us in the front row a little bit because we might be a bit light there. These are kind of one of the things I'm thinking of in my head. But yeah, I think it's just, as you say, Jess, it's just an opportunity to get more game times, get more exposure at this level. And for me, I think it's quite nice that these girls are getting, you know, a couple of games in a row to build some combinations to get some game time. And yeah, it'll be great to get that Ealing monkey off our back because, you know, we've played pretty poorly against them both times, I would say. So just making that game a bit more closer, you know, just making it a bit more interesting, just having the confidence to play our game plan against Ealing as well, I think is going to be massive as well. But yeah, I definitely think result is not of paramount importance. It's the individual performances. And yeah, we'll see what happens this weekend.
On to our next Six Nations deep dive, and we're covering Ireland this week. We spoke about it briefly last week, with the return of Maloney called up into the squad, into the training camp. Let's dig into it into a little bit more detail. I'm going to refresh everybody's memories, including my own. A lot of the issues within Irish women's rugby have come into the fore and been played out, I think, in national headlines. For me, it comes from, and look, I don't know because I'm not based in Ireland, so I can only tell you so much of what I hear from an external capacity. So a lot of this is second, third hand reading of news articles, immersing in social media to see what's happening. But obviously, they hosted the Women's World Cup previously in 2017, and a lot of this issues have come after this sort of 2021 time. It really bubbled up. So there's a failure to capitalize, really, for me on hosting the World Cup previously. I think possibly other unions have learnt from that example when they've hosted, potentially, I think. So let's dig into it. So they hosted the Women's World Cup in 2017. Then there was a headline that hit around September 2021 when the IRFU and Leinster Rugby were forced to issue, it says here in the Irish Independent, forced to issue a joint apology to Connacht and Ulster amidst a major controversy that has erupted following the conclusion of the women's interpros last weekend. Obviously, this is written September 2021. There were videos circulating on social media that showed the Connacht squad's kind of changing rooms around, well, basically around the back of the bins, really, surrounded by rubbish and giant wheelie bins. That was their changing area. This forced a joint statement being released with some apologies that said that due to current government guidelines, because we were in the midst of COVID guidelines then, don't forget where we were in 2021, changing facilities were not available for amateur rugby teams. These temporary facilities should have been set up in a more appropriate area. Mad to think in 2021 that teams were still having to get changed around the back of bins. And when we talk about government guidelines around COVID, it's not exactly sanitary to have rugby teams or any athletic teams in any capacity or any changing room happening around the back of bins in such a unkempt area. Then also the following couple of months, this was December 2021, 62 current and former players wrote to the government in Ireland expressing, and I'm quoting it from the Irish Times, expressing their loss of trust and faith in the IRFU. There was a detailed letter. The writer for the Irish Times says it's a damning indictment of the union's governance of Irish rugby over a sustained period. There was a lack of faith. In response, the union said it dug their heels in. And I'm quoting from the Irish Times, who's pulling a quote from the union saying it refutes the overall tenor of the document, which questions the IRFU's commitment to and leadership of the women's games in Ireland. But the letter was pretty damning. There were high-profile figures in there, recently retired people, legendary figures such as Lynn Cantwell, who's now leading the stuff over in South African women's rugby, and of course, Maloney. They say there was a bitter disappointment of finishing eighth in their home World Cup in 2017. There's been a decline, apparently, for problems persisting for decades, which is conceded with the appointment of, they said, of the IRFU performance directors at the time. There was urgings for reviews for women in action plans to happen. There was criticism or potential criticism about the findings because the IRFU selected some of the findings in reports and things. So, yeah, and it says at the end of this, the plea to the government comes on top of a particularly undistinguished year for the IRFU's governance of women's rugby, from Connacht players being forced to change in horrific outdoor conditions at Donnybrook to the failure in the World Cup qualifying tournament in Palma, because sadly, the Irish women's team failed to qualify in 2021 for the World Cup. So, which prompted some of this. So, decline in the IRFU investment. Of women's rugby, decline in performance, not just in their national team, but also in the kind of pro tournament stuff around the changing room facilities. I was saying, yes, COVID changing rooms for this, but actually, let's not have changing rooms around the back of bins for anybody, COVID or not. And Maloney, particularly, as we know, bore a lot of the brunt of a bit of a backlash that's happened, and she's now back in the squad. It is particularly pleasing, let's go really positive for a second, to see an Ireland bounce back from all of this. When we're talking about this, they failed to qualify in 2021 for the next World Cup. They finished eighth in their home World Cup in 2017. They has been a bit of a decline for decades, this letter says. But now, if we go to where they currently are in the Six Nations table, they're third. So we're now starting to see a bit of a turnaround progression from Ireland. Changes being made, players brought back in, different coaching staff, reviews, reflections, and now they're third in the table behind England and France, which is quite an achievement.
It's quite the turnaround, especially
Yes.
just from in the last 12 months as well.
Yes, absolutely.
When we were thinking this time last year, everyone was like talking about how the WRU had turned things around at women's rugby. They've got this really good professional team that's gonna, start competing with the best and the best. And they're now in a position where they might only qualify for WX3-3 after that defeat to Ireland from last weekend. So the turnaround in the last 12 months has been pretty
Look,
remarkable.
for me, there was a lot of discussion online about Wales's lackluster performance, but I wanted to see maybe an equal amount of discussion, and maybe there was because I missed it, an equal amount of discussion about Ireland's bounce back. Like, yes, there are some issues that Wales are still having to deal with, but looking at the issues that Ireland went through 2021, players in exile not being picked, reviews, changes in procedure, changes in coaches, and now they're third in the table. That's massive. That's massive. Like, let's be really positive about that. Yes, we absolutely are right to criticize the IRFU in their 2017 to 2021 form. That's absolutely right of us to do so. But it's also right for us to go look at the positives that are happening now. And I'm not saying everything's completely fixed. I don't know, because we're not based in Ireland. We're not at the coal face. We're not directly experiencing it. But there are improvements because Maloney's back and they're third in the table. Like, let's also shout about those positives as well. So I wanted to see a bit more of a positive. There was a lot of positive Ireland narrative in the run-up to the game about Maloney. And then I think disappointment at Wales almost took over from that. And I was a bit like, yeah, but yes, Wales' performance was lackluster, but Ireland were also pretty great.
Exactly. I mean, I think a lot of that criticism of Wales was justified. Like, that's a Gloucester Hartbury core team that's quite frankly not turned up. And I think that links back to what I was talking about earlier. Excuse me, in the pod about sort of the professionalism and level of coaching that they're getting. But yeah, I think it's really good that this turnaround and yeah, the hopefully obviously we're talking about the Lions investment as well, that can make sure that this upward curve keeps going upward and that we've got, I think, the player sort of development program in Ireland needs a lot of development, which is I saw a tweet being like, how the hell are they producing these quality of players with probably the worst player development program of all the home nations? It is something that, well, that's testament to the players.
Yeah.
And we've got to remember that the Ireland, where have Ireland come from? Like 10 years ago, they finished third in the World Cup,
Yes.
and they won, I think, the 2015 Six Nations. So, coming from that to then like underperforming at their own World Cup. And then sort of crashing, as it were, between 2017 to 2022, I think I'll extend it to. This recent uptick has been very welcome to see.
Yeah, and look, you mentioned the Lions funding. You're absolutely right to do so. It's really important that, I mean, they've said it, and I read it out earlier, but they want to have a coach accelerator scholarship program that has a specific emphasis on removing gender-related career barriers. So they've obviously identified at, you know, and it won't be a secret to many, it's quite hard for female coaches to progress sometimes in rugby, a lot of times. And I can probably imagine what that environment might have been like for female coaches prior to these changes within the IRFU. So it's really good that they're trying to remove gender barriers, because the more diverse the people are sat at your table, the more diverse ideas you're going to get. The more diverse ideas, the better your team, the better your performance, whether you're a CEO of top business or a local grassroots team. So it is important that we have female coaches, female match officials, female members of boards, and diversity in other areas as well. It's really, really important, because it prevents issues like they've experienced from happening again.
Yeah, I think it's quite key to point out kind of the context of all this is happening. Like, I see all this on Twitter. I'm quite I lived in first year with an Ulster supporter. I've got quite a soft spot for Munster. So I do have a look at Irish rugby. So if anyone thinks that I don't like Irish rugby, that is incorrect. I don't like Leinster and I don't like the Irish men's team. But that's different. But going back to that, I
You
mean
said
that.
before we hit record you were going to like subtly say something about Leinster. You just outright said you hate them.
Oh no, not hate. I don't like them.
Okay.
Because I on Leinster, there's some Leinster players that I really like. I'm a huge fan of Leo Cullen, and I'd have him back at Leicester in a heartbeat. But anyway, I digress. But the thing about going back to the Irish women's setup, if you look at that period where Irish women have crashed, from 2017 to the present day, the Irish Rugby Football Union have cared about two things. That's Leinster or the Irish men's team. And
Yes.
what has that got them outside of two Grand Slams? It's Leinster's trophy cabinet is pretty bare. It's gone pretty much nothing. Munster won the URC pretty much out of spite. And we've seen this massive downturn in the Irish women's national team that's only sort of improved because of this backlash, because of the resistance by the likes of Cliona Maloney, who is now back in. And yeah, it's great that attitudes are starting to change. And we've seen that against Wales. But until the IRFU start caring about more things other than Dublin rugby, they're going to have this issue both in the men's and the women's game. But yeah, I think it is positive this uptick in performance. And my mind goes back. We were talking about the Jess Hayden interview earlier. My mind goes back to when we were interviewing Jess, and she was saying like, "Oh, I think Wales is going to have a pretty good tournament this year. I think they've used Celtic Challenge in the right way. I think Ireland have used Celtic Challenge in the wrong way. Maybe." Results have shown that perhaps it was the opposite, and that Ireland did actually use Celtic Challenge in the right way to build up some momentum, build up some connections, and we saw kind of the fruits bear with that on in their win against Wales.
Yeah, I think discussions around the Celtic Challenge also have to sort of mirror our discussions about the cup for us. And I think like different people are going to use the tournament in different ways. Like for us, we're using the cup just to bank game time. We're not looking at, helping it to, help us win the PWR or get second or third in the PWR this season. So yeah, yes, I was really disappointed by Wales's lackluster performance, but Ireland played particularly well. And I think this could start a bit of a clean sheet, I think, for Irish women's rugby. I think having Maloney back and having Maloney back and playing her in a way where, I think a lot of people feared it would just be 5 minutes and then, you know, is a little bit of a status thing, is a little bit of here you go, tokenism. But it's not, it wasn't that. So, you know, I am hopeful, particularly, I think, aligned with what they've identified or where they've identified the gaps to use their Lions funding for. I think I'm, you know, on pitch combined with that, I think makes me quite hopeful, because you don't say we're going to give you Lions funding to help reduce gender barriers for coaches in a coach accelerator program without having some self-reflection and realizing there are some gaps in the way you've been currently doing things. I don't think you use that investment in that way. I think you'd just go, right, player pathway all the way, because that's the easy answer. Whereas I don't think going, we're going to reduce gender barriers by having some coach accelerator stuff, I don't think is the easy way to use that funding. I think it's certainly the right way, but I don't think that right way has been found without some self-reflection.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So on to our Six Nations preview. And as we've previously said, England are going to play Ireland, hence why we've done Ireland in our deep dive. There, England are hosting Ireland at Twickenham in what could potentially set some new records. I think the crowd is currently at 45 tickets sold, 45,000, not 45 people, more than, you know, 45,000 tickets sold. It's kicking off at 2:15. On the same day, Italy are playing Scotland. That's kicking off at 4:45. And then finishing the weekend on the 21st of April, Wales are playing France, kicking off at 3:15. Thoughts on those other fixtures? Not England versus Ireland, because I think we've talked about England and Ireland a lot this week. What are your thoughts? Because I think we've barely discussed Italy and France. So what are your thoughts first, Jacob, on the Italy versus Scotland game kicking off on Saturday?
It's going to be really interesting, that one, because Italy are at home. They played really well against Wales. Didn't play amazingly against France. But again, when we're thinking in terms of, you know, I said that the battle for third place will be between Wales and Scotland, this Six Nations. I think I've been proven to be incorrect on that. It might actually be between Italy, Scotland or Ireland for that third spot.
So Ireland are in third, as we said. Italy are just behind on 5 points, and then Scotland's currently in fifth on 4 points. So it's tight there in the middle of the table. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know who's going to win that at all.
No. I want to say Scotland. I think I will back our Scottish Tigers gals to recover from last week and get a good away performance versus Italy. So I'm gonna put my name on that. But it'll definitely be close, and it'll be very, very interesting. It'll be something to look at. And then yeah, Wales versus France, like that's well, Wales have to win to get anything from this tournament. And obviously France also have to win in order to challenge England for the title. So yeah, that's going to be another interesting game as well. I'm going to back France in that.
Yeah, I'm backing France. I'm backing Scotland because I feel like they've started out this tournament really well. And they just haven't like got the table points to match some of their performances, I think. I think Scotland could beat Italy if they sort out their lineouts.
Yes.
You cannot be given possession like that away to anybody. Obviously, we talked about it previously. You cannot be given possession away to a team like England, but you cannot be given possession away like that at all. So I think it's just confidence to play to the conditions and what you see in front of you. Just move a bit more with the calls. You don't necessarily have to go stick to your template. I think just play what's in front of you. And if it's not quite working out, try something else. try a short.
Yeah.
I love a short ball at the line out, so I'll be calling for that all day. But if it's windy, you know, it only has to go so far. It's one of the easiest options. So if Scotland sort out their line out, I think they beat Italy, and I think France for sure beat Wales. For sure.
There'll be a response from Wales.
I agree.
There'll be a response, but they won't. I think, again, there's too much of a gap between the two teams.
Yeah, there is. But I think
that's the long and short of it.
There is. There's too much of a gap for this year. There really is. But I think, again, I'm starting to get excited about the next couple of years of competitions, because I think WXV has the potential to close a lot of these gaps. And I think we're seeing some of that happen this year, in the fact that, like, Ireland are third. Amazing. I think we're starting to see a few of those gaps close, but I think it's almost a year too early, 2 years too early for Wales, maybe, to be super, super competitive against France. But you never know. The French could do a traditional French thing and, like, implode.
Yeah.
Who knows? Before we go, I do actually want to just talk about France a little bit, because my Twitter's been, like, lighting up. Basically, BBC Sport tweeted 2 days ago, and they said, we've got so much time for France's warm-up. And there was an amazing, like, music, like,
coordinated
warm-up thing from France. I loved it. It was brilliant. Like, what a way to start a warm-up. Firstly,
yeah,
in a warm-up, great. Coordinated stuff, perfect. I tweeted about some of the comments, because some of the mentions were like, this is why I don't follow women's rugby. This is ridiculous. Who cares about this? It's silly. So I tweeted that, and then I had a load of people saying that they loved it, and I was like, oh my gosh, great. For one of the first times, I've tweeted something about what people have said in comments, and I've got an overwhelmingly positive response to what I've said. Fantastic. I did have, like, people go, oh, double standards of this. You know, the French men have done stuff in the sevens. Like, a colleague of mine at Leeds Beckett was like, just wait till these people see, like, the New Zealand do the haka, you know? Like, just wait. Somebody was like, oh, I'm a men's coach and I wouldn't take this seriously. There's no, like, real rugby specific stuff in this. There's a lot of rugby specific stuff. There's team spirit, togetherness, timing, having a laugh. There's a lot of explosive movements with, like, the hopping and the jumping. There's a lot of groundwork in mobility on the ground of, like, rolling and getting back up again. But more than that, it's a way to just really have fun and focus yourself together as a team, get engaged with your warm-up. And it's also the start of their warm-up. It's not the whole of their warm-up. They're not doing this for all of this. This is a slice of their warm-up that you're seeing. And I think it's bloody brilliant. And I wish more teams did stuff like this, where they felt they didn't have to follow a specific template of, well, this is how we warm up because this is how everybody is. Yes, you've got specific movements and stuff you want to include, but more stuff that is specific to your team that you know is going to drive them and get them fired up. And I play music for my lot. It helps tremendously. It really helps improve our mental resilience when we play on a pitch. Like, when we go out and play, having music in the warm-up just seems to just chill people out and they have a laugh with it. So more stuff like this that shows the individual characters or the individuality of each team to help promote our sport is the best. And I say, if it was a men's team, everybody would be loving it. Now, okay, there's only a minority of people this time saying they hate it. Most people in my mentions, like 90% of people in my mentions, said they loved it, which I think is great and recognizes the flip side. I think 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been 90% of people in my mentions on the attack.
Maybe. It's at the end of the day, it's just authentic team culture.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, you'll always get, for want of a better word, old farts who will poo-poo that. And, you know, if you saw sort of like Steve Borthwick's England men doing that, you will see a lot of criticism about that being like, well, this is not serious and professional, and, you know, this is why we don't win games, and this is England gone woke. You know, there'll be loads of sort of stupid criticisms about that. At the end of the day, it's just authentic, original team culture. And if that's what helps France connect as a team, helps them warm up,
helps them have that sense of community. And if anyone is the best at building those kind of authentic cultures, it's the French.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the backlash that was stupid, but like you said, it's really good that actually that was an unfortunately audible minority, but a small minority nonetheless. And I'm glad that a lot of people saw the positives in it.
So, on that happy note, go out, play some music, dance. What a way to spend your day. Get excited because it's the Six Nations this weekend. Tigers playing Ealing. It's also Derby Day this weekend for the men. I know we haven't spoken about it, but it's one of the best weeks in my entire life when either Tigers men or Tigers women play Saints / Loughborough Lightning. So I get very giddy and excited about it. So I'm very giddy, very excited this week. But the message from us, the big takeaway this week is be like the French women's team. Go put on some music after you finish listening to this podcast. Have a dance, have a laugh and get connected and be merry and happy. And then let's smash Saints this weekend.
What team? Wildcats. Woo!